Doan, James Doan.
Where is 006.9 now?
He's on a mission, sir.
Do you expect me to talk?
An excellent plan, Mr. Doan. Look out, Kate!
Let me try and enlarge your vocabulary.
Oh, hey, my drink!
The biggest counterfeiter of actual money is the United States government.
Choose your next witticism carefully.
I want to be covered in drugs.
One day we must invent a faster working venom.
Yeah.
They cannot counterfeit gold.
The only gold I know about is the kind you wear.
Every law is backed by bullets.
Bullets do not kill. It is the finger that pulls the trigger.
Exactly.
Doom, I like that. And we're here.
What a great intro.
What
man.
A great
That's
intro.
Like
That's
one of my favorites of all time.
That's good. Well, we are live.
Hey,
hey we are on Justin live. TV. Hi, Justin TV.
Yeah.
This is great. This is going to be a coup for us, with courtesy of a Poltergeist.
Yeah.
To set this whole thing up. But anyway, just to get everybody to see, today is the 8th of March.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're only a couple minutes late. We're supposed to start about 8 o'clock local time. And
this is all super test.
We're going to try it out. Anyway, we have lovely Lisa here. She's going to appear from time to time.
Yes.
Lovely Lisa. Meet a maid.
And Counselor Curtis, we have legal things today.
All right, I'm ready, Jim.
Okay, and the erstwhile engineer.
Hey, man, all I do is mix this shit.
No, it's more than that. It's if it wasn't for you, it wouldn't go on.
Well,
but we do want to have a couple of intro things today.
Yeah.
Number one, we do want to thank Nicholas.
Yes, for
oh
sure.
Oh, my God.
We got money.
The man.
We got money.
Money card.
I mean, with money card. Well, what's interesting, I don't know if he sign up for a monthly thing?
No.
He asked us about doing that, but he didn't.
The reason I'm asking, because I listen to one of my other favorite podcasts, is on a website called Edulation, which is like edu-la-shun. It's the School Sucks. It's the School Sucks podcast. The guy's really good. Anyway, he got his first two people with monthly contributions, so we're kind of thinking that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so anyway, we're. Huh. And he does about once a week anyway. It's one of my other favorite podcasts, besides, of course, the
Hangar Dogs.
The Hangar Dogs, right. The Hangar Dogs, which, of course, are, unfortunately, a little
behind
kind of
schedule.
Hit. But we're going to, Stitch, I think, is going to call in.
Well, let's hope to get
Let's hope he does. Yeah, yeah, we'll find out here in a minute. But I did want to say we actually have a list of things we want to talk about today.
Hey!
And there was something else that I have now forgotten about the intro that was top Pentagon. Oh, I do. Here's what I want to do. Anybody that is...
You can play the intro again if you need it.
No, it's okay. today, when Jimmy was actually working out a little bit, I was listening to our, I believe it's our first August 2008 podcast. So, if
2008?
2008.
Wow.
And we talked about the meltdown, the forthcoming meltdown. It was before the election. And we were talking about what people, and we talked a lot about Katrina. That is one of the best podcasts we ever did, I think. I was sitting there, I was doing the little, pumping a little iron and laughing. It was, if you get to go back into the archives, this is one of the things that I do, of course, listen to myself, right? No, listen to you guys. And but anyway, that particular one, if you search on the Jimmy Doan website, our erstwhile engineer here has a list of all of the topics that we talk about. So go to the one that we were talking about, Katrina and the meltdown. And we were so ahead of the curve on this. You cannot imagine. This was before the actual meltdown actually hit. And we were talking about it. I mean, I should be. I don't know why I can't pick out lotto numbers. I mean, we're that good that I should be able to pick out lotto numbers. So anyway, some of the things today, in particular, I wanted to recommend something. I was going to recommend some books, but I did want to make sure. What?
No, go ahead.
Okay, I'm just going to hold this up for now. This is Parkinson's Law. Actually, this is called The Law and the Prophets. But I went on, and people should read this. I'm going to move on to the first topic.
Let's do it.
All right.
And this is something that we can all talk about. This is great. NASA finds up to 1 0.3 trillion pounds of ice on the moon. Good. Okay.
Excellent.
Okay, we can edit that out.
Except for the live show.
Except for the live part, right. Okay, good. Okay. I'm supposed to take dancing lessons. Mrs. Jimmy insisted that I take dance lessons.
Lies and slander! Terrible shame, that.
So I called him, you know, like 2 days ago, and now, here. Uh-huh. Perfect timing.
You're in.
I'm in, right.
All right, so 1.3
trillion pounds of lunar ice, and says it indicates that future lunar visitors could have a wealth of water waiting for them. Now, with water, of course, you can make hydrogen and oxygen, right?
Assuming it's made of hydrogen and oxygen.
What, yeah. Water? Is this some other kind of water that I don't know about? Is there a different kind of water
Well, the thing is, you can make it. But what are we talking about? So in other words, you can create a little atmosphere.
Well, no. Well,
drinking water and fuel and atmosphere.
And breathable something, right?
Rocket fuel, breathable stuff, and you can also do solar power.
Colony on the moon.
Well, maybe not a complete colony, but
plus hydrogen 3, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then blow it up. Okay. Mm-hmm. No, so the new data was found using a NASA radar placed on board in India. An India satellite found this.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, it says Apu has found this, yes. Ice was located in more than 40 craters, and all located near the moon's north pole. It thought it was maybe 600 million cubic meters of ice in the craters. But I love this. They uncovered a significant amount. Now, the question is, what is 1.3 trillion pounds of lunar ice? Jimmy did a little small r investigating. It turns out that Lake Okeechobee here, which I think is one of the larger lakes, free freshwater lakes.
Oh, yeah, it's like top three.
Whatever.
Outside of the grid.
That holds 1 trillion gallons when full. So this
one
is
trillion
a really,
gallons.
Yeah, 1 trillion gallons.
Wow.
And it turns out.
Pounds a gallon.
Well, I know, but I did the math.
Okay.
I already did the math.
Okay.
About 16% of that is what's on the moon.
Okay.
1/16 of Lake Okeechobee.
Right.
It's 156 billion gallons is 1.3 trillion pounds, roughly.
That's enough.
That's enough, right. It's enough to get you started.
Yep.
And, of course, that's only what they've found so far.
You could have a wet T-shirt contest with it.
Absolutely.
You could have a wet T-shirt
And that would bring them on. But the most important thing of this is the other item on this. China to launch space station module.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Hong Kong. The Heavenly Palace, it's called.
Heck man.
The Heavenly Palace. They're not idiots. That's right. None of this Enterprise
International
crap.
Space Station.
The Heavenly Palace, the first module in China's permanent space station, will be launched next year. It's a docking station for future spacecraft. It's expected to be about 30 feet long and have a crew of 3. And the space agency's long-range plans include
2 girls and 1 guy.
I guess. Yeah?
That's what I'd do. Sorry.
Okay. But you're not Chinese.
I don't care.
Space agency's long-range plans include a 20-ton permanent space station that will incorporate the whatever it is, as well as a separate lunar mission by 2022. So they're going to go up and get the water, and as we've talked about before, they're going to, for eBay, in order to pay for this thing, they're going to scarf up our rovers and stuff.
Yeah. Hey, we found you a golf ball.
Yeah, that's right. We found you a golf ball and bring it back. Now, what do you suppose that golf ball would bring on eBay?
Lot of money.
Alan
Shepard, he's dead now.
You're not arguing for space exploration, publicly funded space exploration, are you, Jimmy?
No, not at all. What I'm saying is turn it over to Richard Branson or somebody and let's get on with it, you know?
Yeah. Or,
Virgin Space Exploration. Rutan.
Rutan, yeah.
Their country's first spacewalk was a year and a half ago, and I love this, but they said, well, we're in all for peaceful. This is non-military, although it turns out that the Air Force General Su Kliang said that to some extent, if you control space, you can also control the land, the sea, and you will be in an advantageous position. No military there. Clearly, I think we've all come to understand that space is a contested domain. Okay, well, so we're on top of that. Anything else on that? Okay, good. The national news, now that's international news, although there's one more piece of international news I want to talk about. Do we want to do the Hugo update now? Or should we wait?
Wow.
Did I sneak in there? Okay, we can wait on that.
It depends. I mean, I have to, like, cue the sound effect up.
I understand that. God,
what do you want to do?
Okay, well, at least Lisa's on. That's good. Taking while I shuffle through the paper. what I did think, one of the big news this week was that, what's his name, the guy from Kentucky, Bonner was his name, that held up the jobs bill, the jobless bill.
Yes.
And I thought it was interesting that that he finally relented and decided. What's his name? Why can I not remember?
For those of you who don't know the story, basically.
Jim Bunning is his name, Republican of Kentucky. What happened was they were going to do the jobless bill. This was the bill to extend the unemployment benefits to the year 3000 or something so that nobody has to work forever. It's all federal workers, primarily federal workers that were furlough'd by the Department of Transportation, which apparently had some kind of effect on TSA, which I know that sounds hard to believe, but apparently it made the going through the TSA laborious, as opposed to just cruising through. Anyway, it was $10 billion. And his deal was, he said, we need to find a way to pay for this. You can't just, you know, get the money out of thin air, as they've done with the $1.6 trillion. And everybody said, well, about $1 billion, $10 billion is not even a rounding error. It's peanut change. Exactly. They were crying bloody murder that these federal employees were going to lose. I don't know what they. What happened was they got a day off. 2,000 federal workers were furloughed by the Department of Transportation, and what they want to do, of course, is this is the 30-day extension that they finally did. Anyway, they beat this guy to death, Jim Bunning, and he finally relented and said, "Okay, we'll pass the bill." It was typical of the Senate's rules that one person can hold up everything. It's this filibuster business.
I had no problem with that.
No. And what was funny was the hoorah from all the senators and the House people and so forth, other than two people, Jim DeMint, who's the almost a Ron Paul conservative, he applauded Bunning for this. But all of the talk radio people, I mean, Rush and Neil Bortz, and there were just people all over the place that thought this was a heroic move and that he was doing a great job, and they loved him for doing this stuff. But it was interesting to see that the people that didn't like it were politicians. Because, you know, we don't do business this way. So the public loved it, the politicians hated it, which right away tells you that it was a good thing to do.
Exactly.
But, I mean, his big deal was that the $10 billion cost of unemployment pay should not be added to the deficit. And with Mr. Bunning's battle quickly becoming a national cause celebre, Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, the Republican leader, and Mr. Bunning's home state colleague made it clear earlier that Republicans were trying to end the stalemate. The thing was, what was interesting was that editorial writers, like our Gainesville Sun people here, the media, the lamestream media as they call it, they were all trying to portray him as heartless curmudgeons because they'd only had unemployment benefits for like forever since, you know, Roman times. And now he wasn't going to extend it for another 30 days. And what are these poor people going to do? They're going to starve to death and who knows what. Denying jobless aid to struggling Americans. While Mr. Bunning complained that late night debate was preventing him from watching a college basketball game. Anyway, Senator Jim DeMint said he's my hero this week. And the fights, interestingly enough, the fight spread to the House had to get in on it. And somebody, I can't remember, somebody from Kentucky saying he was embarrassed that a senator from Kentucky was holding our government hostage. It reminds me of when Clinton... Yeah. So anyway, that's the jobless bill. At the same time, the House.
I just want to say, I mean, in terms of this hostage stuff, I love it. I mean,
Gridlock is your friend.
I know. I love the idea that they need 60 votes in the Senate. I think
they should have 100.
Well, you say that. You know who has 100? The Muslims. And there's a lot of. I'm not kidding. There's a lot of stuff out there. Yeah, I know. Scary. There's a lot of stuff out there. When they do voting, they need 100% for their for certain things.
So that's why they're still living in the 10th century.
And it has something to do with their organization
of
government, you know. Yeah. But I mean, you know, I don't know how pervasive it is and how many different things it affects. But I will say this: I think that they should require supermajority voting for a lot of things.
Well, the idea is always you should always allow supermajority when you pass a tax bill. And a simple majority to cut taxes.
Okay, I could go with that.
In other words, if you're going to collect,
if you're going to take away a law, the simple majority ought to do it. If you're going to put a law on the books, it ought to take.
And in fact, that's the way it is with our constitutional amendment, for instance. In order to make an amendment, it's two thirds plus three quarters, and all that stuff. But interestingly enough, to dovetail on this jobless bill, they also have a $15 billion job bill. So not content with jobless, now they're going to have a jobs bill. And this
I thought that was when you were talking about.
No. This is the jobless bill is unemployment compensation for people that are out of work.
So there's two?
This is totally different. This is the House. That's the Senate.
Oh, okay.
In the House has adopted a $15 billion plan to spur...
both of them fixing it.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying they're fixing it on either side.
All right.
They get if you're not working, we're going to pay you, and then maybe we'll pay you to work, too. Although it's the problem that they've got is when you start paying people to work, where are those people going to come from? And they're probably coming from people who are already working, actually. So as we've always said, any job created by government is a job taken away from the private sector. And, of course, since all money comes from the private sector to pay for government, it's kind of...
Even as Stitch said, whatever, they fired him from his job and rehired him as a personal contractor to come back to work for the government. Yeah.
So anyway, the House adopts a $15 billion to spur job growth. There's so many things about this that are great. The Democrats pushed through the measure on a party-line vote. They characterized the measure, which also funneled an extra $20 billion into road and bridge construction, the first step in a broad legislative push to bolster the economy and encourage hiring. Of course, Representative so-and-so from some place or another estimated that the measure could create 1 million jobs. And what if it doesn't? I mean, what I like is creating jobs. You have to understand, you have to have the people first. You may create a job, but if there's nobody to fill it,
you have
then
to have the actual thing for the people to do first. I mean,
that's number one. But of course, you can get them as they did in the WPA in the 30s. You can get them digging holes and filling them back up again. I mean, that's.
I see this. Eleanor Cliff again amazingly came out. She's great at this stuff. I mean,
it is stunning. She's been on that. She's been on McLaughlin Group for 20 years or
and
more. Never changed. She has seen the wreckage of
train wreck.
The train wrecks over the last 20 or 30 years.
She's got a completely different interpretation of the whole thing. I mean,
you talk about somebody who is just.
Let me tell you something. McLaughlin knocked it out of the park this week. Okay, I'm not kidding.
I missed it.
This week they compared Obama's policies in his first and second year to Reagan's policies in his first and second year.
Okay, right.
And they basically said, okay, you had this issue, you had this little depression happening, and Reagan's policy was go ahead and cut taxes and let things go and see what happens, and Obama's is go ahead and spend some money and see what happens.
Right.
And completely different approaches.
Right.
Well, the blonde girl, I can't remember her name, that's on there recently.
The conservative
Monica,
blonde girl.
Yeah.
I know who you're talking about.
She understood what it was. Eleanor's interpretation was, again, animal spirits. Her interpretation was...
Keynesian.
I know, it was perfect.
Kool-Aid.
What she said was, Reagan did a good job of convincing the people that his policies were good, and therefore the people got behind him, and it worked.
I see.
And if Obama had done that, if he had just gotten the message out there correctly, it would have worked.
Right.
And forget the fact that the policy is the exact opposite.
Right.
And she just doesn't understand that
she's one of these people that thinks that if you can convince people that there is no gravity, that gravity will cease to exist.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And you will just float. Yeah. Up into the sky. Yeah.
Dude, now, that would be so wicked cool.
Exactly.
Oh, I knew you thought. I was just going to say.
I bet you we got a color on the
back. All right.
Yes, Ditch from the Hanger Dog. Oh, he's a man.
From Colorado.
That's good there, Kurt. I like that.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
Well, where's your, we're on TV here, and you're not.
he's on TV.
I've always been behind the times, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
On some things.
Well, if you were here, we'd probably get the female contingent to call in.
Yeah.
So,
that might be true. I don't know.
Yeah, we couldn't. We jam our phone lines.
it's very hard to show my endowment as much as you know, Lisa would be able to, you know, if you know what I mean.
No, I have no clue what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just saying. Well, hey, if you want a little hanger dogs on a Jimmy Doan show, I got a little something for you.
Yeah, okay, absolutely, yeah. Bring it.
Obviously, we've had that healthcare summit and all this.
The highly productive and bipartisan idea cornucopia.
I mean, really, they should have shared some beers. They would have done more, I think.
Now, here you go, Sitch. Yeah.
I think what we need to do is destroy the sun, because that's what's causing all our problems.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay,
you know,
ahead.
If we did destroy the sun, all this stuff would go away, to include, you know, any podcast, actually. So, I don't know.
Well, we fired at it the other day. Nothing happened.
Yeah, did you?
Yeah.
Well.
Please continue on.
We thought we had succeeded, because about 9 o'clock the sun went away, and it didn't come back for a long time, and we thought, well, you know, we've done our job.
Wow.
But no, it came back.
Yeah. The power the Jimmy Doan show has is just truly, truly magnificent, I think.
It is.
Truly magnificent. Well, you know, for all the talk about the reconciliation of this health care bill in the Senate.
Right.
I think that the House vote may be the more important one.
Oh, no question. No question about it.
Well, because the House passed health overhaul legislation back in November by a very narrow 220 to 215 vote.
Right.
And then since then, several Democrats, of course, have defected.
Right.
Or have left the House.
And and several of them also mentioned that if the Senate bill is as it is, they absolutely said they were going to vacate their vote
previously.
Yeah,
it was so funny. I saw they had exactly those people on again, the Sunday morning show with the new Face the Nation guy, Gregory.
Yeah.
And he had on the Health and Human Services Secretary, and he said, okay, here's the problem. Here's the problem. These 12 people are going to defect. And he played the clip, and she said, no, they're wrong. You know, she denied the premise.
Sibelius or whatever is that? Who
yeah,
you
exactly.
Catherine, whatever.
Yeah.
Sibelius. Yeah,
Sibelius.
She denied
right.
the premise. She basically said the bill doesn't say that.
Ah.
I mean,
right.
Okey-doke.
Okey-doke. That's the smoke and mirrors for today. Thank you so much for coming. Yeah.
So anyway,
yeah,
go ahead.
So to avoid the filibuster in the Senate, you know, that Democrats can't defeat, the Boho's now pushing the House to approve the Senate's version of the bill.
Right.
Along with a package of changes to fix elements of the Senate bill that House Democrats don't like, including the special Medicaid deal for Nebraska.
Right.
Well, that's the tax on high-value insurance plans. That is opposed by organized labor, ironically.
Yep.
If Pella Lugosi is able to strong-arm the Senate bill through the House with a bare majority, then, you know, Senate reconciliation becomes moot. But with three vacancies, Democrats need just 217 votes for passage. But there's a handful of Democrats who voted no in November who now say they're undecided. Of course, on the other hand, you got 12 pro-life Democrats that say they're prepared to switch sides and scuttle Obamacare, you know, if they don't put in protections against abortion funding, which they aren't in place. So, and the Senate bill doesn't meet that. So, but of course, never underestimate Chicago politics, my friend.
Yeah.
No, well,
for
not
example,
only that.
Representative Jim Matheson, he's a Democrat from Utah. He voted against Obamacare in November, and now he's undecided.
Yeah.
So on Wednesday, Obama nominated Jim's brother, Scott, to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, of course, offering jobs for playing the White House way is nothing really new. And, you know, Matheson, to be fair, is pretty well-credentialed nominee. But,
right.
you know, the appearance of selling judgeships for health care votes.
Nothing new to Chicago or Louisiana.
Yeah, should give you some pause. Well, exactly. I mean, they're, you know, in Nebraska, apparently. There's a quote from this Ed Schultz. He's a MSNBC character.
Oh, yeah, he got... Yeah, what did he say?
He said, small government has never gotten anybody any health care. The Republicans have a choice. Lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. We have people in need, and they need to be helped. So Stitch's comment to Ed Schultz is, you know, if government would get out of the way,
yep.
those people might be able to help themselves,
yep.
as, of course, our founders had intended. But then again, I'm not so sure Democrats are about to let that happen.
No. No, well, the question is, here's the deal, as we've talked about previously, is that the bribery came out in spades, of course, beginning with Landrieu or whatever, whoever was down in, or I forget who it was down in Louisiana. You know, the this was the Louisiana bailout, and then the next one was Ben Nelson. And now, of course, you're going to have everybody else is saying, whoa, where's mine?
Well, sure.
And so you don't be surprised if...
Well, some of those Democrats figured out real early on, even with a little game theory.
Yep.
Theory.
Okay, we've got all the winning votes. So, how can I get my leverage? And of course, they decided, well, I'll just sort of hold back and
sure.
be undecided.
Now I'm undecided.
Right, exactly.
And guess what?
Now I'm undecided.
What are you going to get me? I'll tell you, I'd be retired. I would get whatever I got and have it in cash, and I'd be like in the Caribbean on a non-extraditable country.
It's going to be interesting to see.
No, the bribery is going to. It's going to be, shall we say, unseemly at best. And it'll be. It's going to give unseemly a bad name.
Well, we have to change that word.
Yeah.
Did anybody notice that that the Democratic Congress reauthorized the Patriot Act?
I heard something about that. I heard that they were
slipped right by me.
Gosh, that's surprisingly.
Isn't that cool how they did that? You got to give them props for that.
Yeah,
they had all this other stuff going on, and they actually reauthorized that crazy Patriot Act that they condemned so vehemently during the Bush 43 administration.
Yep.
So,
well, not only
course,
that,
of course, his hope and changeness. He signed the reauthorization bill.
Yeah.
So,
well, we got no change, so we got plenty of hope left anyway. But the thing that I did, the other thing that I did notice was that McCain and Lieberman have linked up to deny any kind of habeas corpus or Miranda or whatever it is, infinite detention on terrorists, that no matter how you find them, if we can just go round them up and put them away. If we determine that that person is a terrorist, and it's a brand new bill that is, they say, well, it's the same old, but of course, then the question is, well, why do you have to have this new expanded bill? But anyway, let me go back
and that's one thing at least Obama on the healthcare thing came out and said, everything has been talked about.
Yeah, right. He didn't ask me.
I mean, seriously, it's
everything.
Right. I mean,
there's no more debate.
No. We have
socialist or you're a freedom lover.
Well, no, but what we've done is we've examined every single way you could possibly do health care, from no bill all the way up to complete control. We've examined all of it.
And reshuffled it a couple times.
And we come up with this 2,700-page bill that will cover exactly and precisely the health care needs of 320 million people.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it. It's so perfect in 2,700 pages. No mischief in there. And it's going to save money, and everybody's going to live forever, and everybody's going to have the doctor they want or the plan they want, and it's all covered precisely because we have skillfully integrated in this 2,700-page bill everything
with Ray Kurzweil,
everything that you ever want to know. Mm-hmm. About healthcare.
Yeah.
Well, you need to go no further. You cannot take away a word or add a word. It's perfect.
I heard him invoking the late Senator Kennedy this Sunday, how he was the one who identified healthcare as a fundamental right.
He wasn't actually. It's been,
no, well, of course not. But I mean, it's
but
just
I mean,
like.
Well, of course, Kennedy cleverly checked out.
Yeah, well, even with all that money, it didn't work out so well for him.
No, it was a fundamental right. How come he's not still living?
Yeah. Well, that's what it is funny when you talk about it, and I've talked, a lot of people have talked about this recently.
I guess the healthcare system wasn't good enough is probably what it was.
Yeah. Well, fundamental right, of course, means that it applies to everybody. One of the things, of course, I have a question about This is what's so magic.
General welfare or provide welfare.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I've always had a question about, and it's interesting because my nephew is an Obama. I mean, he has really had the Kool-Aid. I mean, he just.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Who?
Chad.
What?
Oh, no. Chad is just. Oh, no. He would bow down and drink the man's urine, for God's sakes. He thinks.
You gotta be absolutely
No, I'm serious. No, he is absolutely worship the Messiah. He considers Obama absolutely,
All right, so anyway.
He wanted me to build a silencer for his gun, for crying out loud.
Yeah, no,
I got a new bumper sticker. Chad's a chode.
No, you know, the mic, just before I get on this, that I don't let me forget about the 320 million number. But before I get on that, I've got the magnetic bumper sticker on my car that says, "How's that Hopi Changey business working out for you?" And you can't imagine how many people come up to me in parking lots and want to buy it, which fortunately...
I had one stolen off my car.
Well, what I...
Because it's magnetic, you dumbass.
No. You don't understand. I've sold them. Yeah. I bought a bunch of them, and I put on one a day, and invariably somebody comes up and says... Where can I get one of those? And I say, right here, pal, $10.
Yeah. Step and right up here.
It just so happens.
It just so happens you can have this one.
You know, watch. You need a cigarette.
And what?
Nothing. I'm saying that's the other stuff you got in your trunk is what.
Yeah.
When your trunk pops open, it's like a little rack.
Oh, that's
stuff.
Oh yeah. No. I'm like this. And what do you want here? A little snake oil salesman. I've got an electric.
A bunch of display cases pop up.
That's right. Hey, know. Rolex watches right here. $10.
Power dildo.
We got it all right here. What do you want?
Flashing light.
I've got this bottle. This bottle will cure your ills. What's wrong with you? You know, no problem. Broken leg. This will fix it. So anyway, no.
Shaped like a penis, but it works out pretty well.
That's it. So anyway, I love the fact. I mean, this guy. When you talk about the true believers, I mean, there's just you know. So my sister-in-law called me up and she says, "Would you please talk to him?" I said, "He's too far gone. I mean, this is you know, this is,
let him go.
That's it. Just Jim
Get
Jones.
Him loose.
This is Jim Jones time, you know." And I just and I, so anyway, I think about it. And he's talking about his philosophy is let's ram it down their throats and they'll be thankful.
Oh,
and
sure.
And I'm going like. Yep. Why do you have, if it's such a good deal, why do you have to ram it down somebody's...
That's it. That's the whole philosophy. Because
Americans are stupid.
I understand that.
Right.
But we don't... But
it's
we
not
have,
just
But
Americans.
You know, one of the things that was always great about this country is we have a right to be stupid.
Not anymore,
and not
man.
Anymore,
not
right?
Not anymore.
But here's the deal. The question that I've always had is this. What's so magic about everybody in the United States except for the power... struggle that's going on. When you think about it, Sweden, for instance, population 8 million, has a universal health care system. Now, I don't know how it works. I don't know. It doesn't really matter to me one way or the other. But it's 8 million. So apparently the minimum pool that you need is around 8 million people. Great Britain let me just finish. The UK is like 60 million or something. France around the same. Germany, I think, 60 or 70 million. Italy, Spain. They all, you know, Luxembourg, the Netherlands is 16 or 17 million or however many people there are there. They all have universal health care. So my point is this. Apparently, the pool size that you need to make it work is something about, the state of Florida, 18 million. So why wouldn't you let the states only do their universal health care and see how it works out for you? Why?
Like because there's more money in the global.
No. Don't get me wrong. Obviously, it's a power thing. But my point is this. The question is this: you can't have insurance, for instance, on one person, you know, and there's no actuarial advantage to it. You collect $200, if this person gets sick, you're broke. So you have a pool, obviously. Well, on universal health care, apparently the pool, let's assuming that it works in Sweden, the minimum would say be about 8 million. Yeah. Here in Florida, we have 18 million. Why not? And like they say, like you just said, they're doing it in Massachusetts. And the question is, how's that working out for you? Well, literally in Massachusetts, it wasn't 2 months before they realized they were broke. I mean, it went crazy, and they're still saying, "Well, we missed 100."
Well, Jimmy, you're assuming that they're buying the argument that the pool of the pool argument that you just made. That is to say, that once you get to 8 million people, that it's a sustainable number.
Right.
Well, the feds aren't buying that. Their thing is, if it's failing, the Democrats or the socialists, as I like to call them now, if it's failing, if it's a failing government project, the reason is because it's underfunded.
Right.
I mean,
we're going to talk about that.
There's not enough people to, like, you know.
But I mean, what I'm saying is, what's so magic about 320 million? I mean, why not include Canada and Mexico in this as long as you
could? I mean, yeah. Look, it's an us and them.
Worldwide, sure. 6 billion.
Why not? Of course. I mean, why not?
Look, intergalactic insurance.
That's right.
This is a benevolent dictatorship philosophy. Okay?
Right.
This is, they're going to do it.
We will insure the beauty of it.
That's right. No, the beauty of this, it's a benevolent dictatorship except for the benevolent part. It's a benevolent dictatorship except for the benevolent part.
Yeah. No, it's perfectly benevolent. I mean, in the sense that they're trying to do right by you. But it's like when Jim Carrey was given all the powers, God's powers. Go ahead, answer all these prayers.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
No.
You can't keep track of it. The only way to keep track of it is to disperse all the individual decision making throughout the market.
The thing about it, and that's the thing that people don't, when you talk about this, they 2,700 pages, and they say, and they'll say something like, well, it's just too complicated for you to understand. I'm looking up saying, it's too complicated for you to understand.
Yeah.
It's too complicated for anybody to understand. And for you to try and corral all these disparate interests on 320 million people. And they said, well, it's for the general welfare. But if you can point to a person or a million people that it's not going to be for their general welfare, then it's not the general welfare. It's only for some people's welfare. And the thing, of course, that is so stunning about this and that you want to ask people is what if I inherited, you know, $10 million and I don't want to be part of your plan? I just don't want to participate.
Right.
What possible guys in the United States, home of the free and land of the brave, can you come to my front door with a gun
and say you
must pay for this?
It used to be that you're right, that our entire legal system was built on the idea that reasonable people could disagree. And so then you didn't have to agree with the people and you didn't have to give them your money. Now we have administrative law, which is built on the concept that reasonable rules are okay. Well, if you think about it, if somebody's making a reasonable rule, there's going to be other reasonable people who disagree with it.
Right.
But it's too late because the rule's already been made.
I'm going to not even digress. You brought up something that I love. It had to do with another subject here that I was going to talk about and probably will. Has to do with board opening. Let's see. It has to do with gridlock maybe ending on consumer protection. We're going to talk about that later. But I want to show you something here. This, you see this here? This is one item from one day's Federal Register. Now, people don't realize this, but as you just said, laws are made by bureaucrats anymore. I mean, all of them. Every single day that Congress, working day of the government, the Federal Register issues a 250-page book of proposed rulemaking. So anyway.
There's a camera right there.
Yeah, you're right. No, they're gonna really be calling if they see Mrs. Jimmy. So anyway, the point is that that 250 pages a day, every day that the government's in. This is one of, I don't know how many there were in this particular, this is from December 8th of last year. This is one particular rule thing on, this is Department of Health and Human Services. And here, just to give you an exact, a quick summary, not a summary, I'm going to read you just one sentence from this. Let's see. The FMAP is used to determine the amount of federal matching for specified state expenditures for assistance payments under programs under the Social Security Act, sections 1905B and 1101A8B, that is sub A, sub 8, sub B, four levels down, of the Social Security Act, quote, the Act, require the Secretary of Health and Human Services to publish the FMAP rates each year. The Secretary calculates the percentages using formulas set forth in sections 1905B and 1101A, 8, and B, and from the Department of Commerce, the statistics of average income per person in each state for the nation as a whole. I mean, this goes on for four pages like this, okay? These are the way laws are made. This is one day, one item out of maybe 100 for one day, and that's going to be law. And, you have 15 days to complain. And if you don't complain in 15 days, voila, it is a law. I mean, and Congress, no clue. I mean, who sits down and reads all 265 pages every
experts?
The experts.
Yes.
Well, I mean, that is where, as Tacitus said, tyranny, let's see, the more laws, the more tyranny. And that was done, you know, 2,000, 3,000 years ago.
We've been ramping them up, Jimmy, like we said.
So anyway, that...
We should have done a time-lapse photography of the law library over the last 20 years.
Well, of course, the thing is, it's accelerating. I mean, somebody told me the other day that the IRS code is 9 million words. I mean, I don't know how much that... I mean, that's... You know, a normal novel is 20,000 words.
Bigger than 8 million words.
Yeah. Good.
Glad to have you on the show, Eric.
Yeah,
God, hey, man. You know, I'm back. I had to go to the whatever thing.
All right, what's next?
Okay, what's next? This is Government Motors has decided to reinstate 600 dealers. Now.
Oh, well, thank goodness.
Yeah, well, here's the deal.
They got a call, didn't they?
Yeah. Obviously. Well, this what is so
they
funny.
They got a call from who?
They got a call from, like,
the
Rahm Emanuel or somebody.
Oh, no. Did you hear? That's right.
We did. Rahm's in hot water.
Right? Hot water.
But we'll talk about that in a second.
I'm going to talk about this right out. Because don't forget that, because I love that one. I want to hear more about that one. Okay. GM to reinstate 600 dealerships. Now, one of the things that happened with, as you know, the question is this. When the government takes over any enterprise, do you think any politics enter into it?
No,
do you think that possibly business decisions might go out the window and that politics might possibly enter into it?
We're looking out for our best interest, Jimmy.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah.
So anyway, what happened was...
business people. Best of the best.
So what...
Sir!
As you well...
Sir!
As you well know, before, when GM declared bankruptcy, the head of General Motors said, okay, we had to close about 2,000 or 1,100 dealerships. Well, of course, then they kicked him out and put in a government hack. And so now Government Motors has decided to defy the market. So they're going to reinstate these 600 dealerships.
And put some happy faces on them.
I guess. Well, they, it's funny because the dealers were screaming about this, of course. And it's good for...
The
course,
way that I read that situation was they called their union bosses.
They did.
A couple of phone calls.
That's right.
Down to the union.
Little way, what do you got? Hey, you know, right.
You got a shot of 600 dealerships, huh?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Anyway, Fitzgerald, they're talking about Jack Fitzgerald, a major car dealer in the D.C. area. GM is doing the right thing. Of course, he lives in D.C., and you know he's got three dealerships. So Fitzgerald has three dealerships that GM had scheduled for closing. So they're doing the right thing. Well, duh. So anyway, I love this. If it is sincere... let's say, even with the reinstatement, some dealers who helped fight to keep dealerships open were skeptical. If it's sincere, we welcome it with open hands and really appreciate it, said so-and-so, which is one of Washington area's largest auto dealers. Darvish said she worried that General Motors would use the criteria to reinstate dealers, and some wouldn't be, certain criteria that they wouldn't be able to meet. I just don't think that these...
Yeah, like, they have to be profitable.
Right. Well, that's right. No, that is... No, it's funny you should mention that. They have,
said... Don't mention the P word.
Yeah, that's right. They have said that the Government Motors people, the GM people, have said, well, we're going to reinstate these 600 dealerships, but we got to give them, you know, a pad of paper to fill out first to see if they qualify to open. And, of course, now the question is this. Like you say, well... profit may be one of the items, but you know, we'll waive that if you've, I don't know, given a donation.
Cards, if you're selling green cards.
Yeah, that's right, whatever. So anyway,
can I have a look? I've never seen a refund check before.
No. We meant hybrids, not the color green.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, exactly. So anyway, I think that it's, you ask yourself, is there any politics involved in this? Chrysler, of course, also is on. They had targeted 789 dealerships for closing, but they said that because their dealerships were not included as part of the newly reorganized company and so forth, they could close them. So anyway, Chrysler got off the hook, and GM is going to have to open up 600 that they wanted to close because they weren't making any money, and too bad.
Mm-hmm.
We love it. So talk about Rahm.
Okay, Rahm.
This is great. I mean, I only heard bits and pieces of this, but
I've only heard as well. Rahm apparently opened his big pie hole.
Pie hole.
Yes, and said something to the effect of, "If the president had listened to me,
right,
we'd be in better shape."
Right.
And of course, the press corps, who's been there since like LBJ,
right,
is saying, Man, you don't say that. I mean, you're the chief of staff. No. That's like...
I heard even Mark Shields, he also worships at the Obama altar and was on Shields and Brooks or whatever, who was the McNeil Lehrer or whatever, and he was stunned.
Brooks, I mean, Shields his, and Dunn?
Whatever. Anyway, Brooks, he was stunned. Dunn. I mean, he couldn't... He said, you know, if this had happened with James Baker or, you know, any chief of staff from, like you say, ever,
yeah,
they would have been, literally, the words would have still been hanging in the air yeah. as they had their bags packed and out the door. Yeah. And this, what you want, everybody, as you say, the press corps sitting there, they're speaking. No, you hit it exactly right. They are... No words. What is going on here? Yeah. I mean, I am sitting here laughing because here are the lapdogs, the press lapdogs, the people who, as I say, worship at the altar, and they can't understand why Obama didn't just kick this guy out on his... Well, because he's a weak guy. I mean, you know, he's in a way over his head, obviously. Well, apparently he also dissed Obama's second in command. I forget the guy's name.
Ed Biden.
No. That's too easy. No, it was one of the staff people here. It wasn't Gibbs. It was, there's another guy who is, gets up with Obama and goes to bed or whatever, puts him to bed, whatever, along with Rom. And I forget his name, but he's, apparently he's got a mustache and he's heavy and bald or something.
Well, there you go. He's got a mustache.
Right.
Are you talking about the senior advisor?
Yeah, the senior advisor, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Porn star.
Huh?
Former porn star.
No, yeah, right. Exactly.
Wearing a clown outfit by chance?
No, that's right. Yeah. No, you're talking about, yeah, senior, that's right.
I know which one. I know which guy.
Anyway, but they dissed him too. Mm. And so the press corps immediately, en masse, runs over to that guy and says, well, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? And of course, I don't know. I mean, just usual. You know, they know how to talk without saying anything. I mean, these guys. I could tell who these people were when I was in high school, when they would write a term paper, not a term paper, but an essay that was like 2 pages long and say nothing. So that's what these guys, they're good at. Mm-hmm. Been good at it since high school. So anyway, so the question is Rom doomed?
I've heard some people saying as much. And some people have said, well, Shields was one who said he better do something to smooth things over a bit. But
somebody said that he went out and, you know, didn't do a mea culpa, but a sort of an extended explanation of what he really meant kind of thing that didn't satisfy anybody.
What I had said was...
yeah. You didn't hear the whole thing.
What I really meant was...
Yeah, so...
Don't tase me, bro.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, okay. We're going to have to come back with that because we've got to take a quick break for our little... thing here, but
our thing.
Well, we have a thing.
Specifically.
Well, because we have a thing.
Okay.
Anyway, but we'll come back in the next hour and talk about the next stuff.
So can I get up to now? Are we still?
Yeah, you can go pee.
Mm-hmm.